The following episode of Animal Airwaves Live was recorded at an earlier time. From WUFTFM, this is Animal Airwaves Live, our weekly hour-long show devoted to the discussion of the health and welfare of animals. I'm Dana Hill, and I'm so glad that you're tuning in on this Friday, March 12th, 2021. And I'm really happy to welcome to the program today, for the first time from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine, Dr. Erin Mishosha. And she is here to talk about the unique benefits of integrative veterinary medicine. And that sounds like a mouthful, Dr. Mishosha, but I think that we would do our audience a favor by sort of explaining what integrative medicine is and kind of how it relates to the veterinary medicine that we all sort of know and understand, not just from this show, but from having pets and visiting our veterinarian.
Of course, yeah. So integrative medicine is really kind of reaffirming the importance of the relationship between the veterinary practitioner, the client, and the patient. So it's focusing on the whole patient's health and utilizing all evidence-based therapeutic approaches that are currently available to optimize health and well-being of the patient.
Okay. Now, I think that I get where you're going with this, but what this means is it's going to be some therapies perhaps that people don't typically think about, but which can be beneficial to the health of our pets.
Absolutely. So whereas, for instance, if you had an older dog that's starting to show signs of joint pain, a traditional kind of general practice veterinarian might be recommending things like nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories to help with pain relief, whereas an integrative practitioner might be pulling from other options available, such as rehabilitation therapy, potentially supplements that have evidence behind them for helping to relieve joint pain, et cetera.
So I want to think about this in terms that people listening who have pets might kind of understand. And going back a little bit to what you said, a dog that was maybe experiencing some discomfort might have traditionally been prescribed some non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. These are things that you and I might take if we felt a little bit sore or what have you. They've been around forever. They work by and large, but there are other options, and that is kind of where you come in and other veterinarians who practice integrative veterinary medicine would come in. And that means that you're offering therapies that are a little bit, maybe, I don't want to use the word not traditional, but they're therapies that folks may not be as familiar with.
Yeah, so kind of synonyms for these type of therapies would be complementary or alternative therapies. So maybe not as our traditional, as traditionally taught in veterinary school, things that might be coming out of the woodwork in more recent research, but certainly have been shown to be useful for whatever type of disease that we're currently treating in a patient.
I think the important point to make here is that we're not talking about therapies that are not proven to be helpful.
Absolutely not. So everything that we practice is certainly evidence-based. So therapies that have been shown in these types of patients with this type of injury or illness to be useful, but just maybe weren't taught in veterinary school 20 years ago, so a little bit newer, and maybe stemming from types of therapies that aren't as traditional, so not maybe medications, but more exercises, manual therapies, supplements, acupuncture, that sort of thing.
I want to ask how some of these therapies entered the realm of veterinary medicine. Do some of them have their origins in human medicine?
Yeah, most of them do. So, you know, thinking about acupuncture for one, certainly it was used on humans initially, thousands of years ago, and then in veterinary medicine started coming over through horses, actually. So horses were used for work, you know, years and years and years ago. So their points that were already used in people were transposed over to the anatomy of a horse, and then to a dog, and subsequently now we're kind of transposing points over to lots of other species as well. So a lot of these therapies we've seen as veterinarians maybe work on the human side and said, hey, maybe we should be looking at this for our veterinary patients as well.
Now, you say that a generation or so ago, these were not therapies that were taught in veterinary schools. But they are available now to students who are studying veterinary medicine. Why do you think that the shift has occurred? Is it that the demand from clients was there, or was it because veterinarians saw that there was a great likelihood of success with some of these alternative therapies, and clients have kind of gone along with it because it has proven to be effective?
I think it's a combination of the two. So certainly initially we had to have some veterinarians that were interested in this area of medicine and saw the gap that was here in vet med, where maybe, you know, there are some patients that we can't treat with arthritis with traditional non-steroidal anti-inflammatories because they have maybe advanced liver or kidney disease. And in humans, we have these other options available to us that we could pull from. And hey, maybe we should be looking at these other types of therapies that may suit this patient better, may have less side effects, that sort of thing. And then we also needed clients to, you know, have a demand for that. And I think that came along a little bit later, where, you know, our clients were saying, hey, you know, my physical therapist really helped me with this issue. I wonder, you know, if this could be helpful for my dog too, and increase that client demand for these therapies as well.
See, now I kind of suspected that, right? Because as these therapies have proven to be popular with the public for themselves, right, as human beings, it stands to reason that people would ask the question, well, I wonder if this would be something that would be beneficial for my pet if my pet is going through something that is not tremendously dissimilar to what I am going through. For instance, sore joints or muscle pain or that kind of thing, maybe mobility issues that happen as we all get a little bit older. It stands to reason one might ask the question, I wonder if this treatment that I'm getting for myself that is helping me might also help my dog, for instance.
Absolutely.
What is the discussion of this like in the professional literature, journals, and so forth?
Sure. So it kind of depends on the area, but there are a number of kind of review articles looking at integrative veterinary medicine and the curriculums that are currently present at different veterinary schools and trying to make it a little more cohesive so that other schools can see what we're doing and maybe institute a similar curriculum in their school. In regards to the therapeutics that we're using, we're certainly using all types of the literature to put out research evaluating these therapies and in support of these therapies or refuting these therapies in veterinary patients, as sometimes it might be the case. So you'll see it certainly a plethora of research articles coming out evaluating these different types of therapies in the literature at this point.
But folks who are listening to this program should probably understand that practitioners of integrative veterinary medicine are first and foremost veterinarians.
Absolutely. Step one.
Yes, right. So that means all the things that veterinary school and becoming a professional veterinarian involves, which we've discussed on this program for years and years. It is a complex, it is a long process, and there are many steps along the way in which veterinary students, after becoming, you know, doctors of veterinary medicine, then have to be in a practice and so forth. And it sounds to me like integrative medicine is something that is a specialty that is added on after all of that.
It is, and that's, you know, a very new area too. So we have, for instance, at the University of Florida, a residency in integrative veterinary medicine that prepares our residents for board certification in the Specialty College of Rehabilitation and Sports Medicine. And our residents also undergo additional training in the areas of nutrition and acupuncture because those are important areas of integrative medicine too. So it's very much additional training on top of the normal four-year veterinary curriculum to develop this additional knowledge base to be able to offer it best for our patients.
Okay. When this integrative medicine and the rehabilitative medicine became more popular over time. Did you see in veterinary clinics across the country increased numbers of veterinarians specializing in this?
Yeah, so we're really in the very early stages of the specialization in integrative veterinary medicine. So as I mentioned, with our residents, they can't get a board certification in integrative veterinary medicine yet because we don't have that specialty college yet in vet med like they do on the human side in human medicine. So currently, most of these specialists are falling under the sports medicine and rehabilitation and or nutrition board certifications. But getting additional training in these other types of areas of integrative medicine, too, as a part of their training.
I see. Okay. You mentioned several components that are involved in integrative medicine, and that is to say, a different kind of specialty areas. I don't know how you all would describe it. I mean, rehabilitative medicine or acupuncture. I mean, these are techniques that would need to be employed by people who understand them well. I'm thinking especially something like acupuncture, right? I mean, that's a whole extra level of training above and beyond in order to successfully practice it. And we'll talk about that more later in the program. And it's been years and years since we talked about that on this show. But I wonder if the number of veterinarians who specialize in this across the country does continue to grow, even if here locally we don't have an official certification program for it yet.
No, it absolutely is growing. So a lot of people, even if they're not pursuing residency training in this, are pursuing other certifications and other continuing education after veterinary school. For instance, certifications in acupuncture or rehabilitation medicine. So there are a lot of avenues that veterinarians can take to get some advanced training in parts of integrative medicine that's really booming at this point.
Okay. I think this is a good opportunity to take our first break here on the program. I want to remind listeners that this is Animal Airwaves Live. I'm Dana Hill. My guest today from the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine is Dr. Aaron Mishosha. We're going to take a short break. Back right after this with more on integrative veterinary medicine. Welcome back to Animal Airwaves Live. I'm Dana Hill. This is our weekly hour-long show devoted to the discussion of the health and welfare of animals. My guest today from the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine is Dr. Aaron Mishosha. We're talking about the unique benefits of integrative veterinary medicine. And before we get to the unique benefits per se, I want to ask Dr. Mishosha, what on a daily basis might you be doing in a clinical setting? Are there a number of different therapies that you personally are involved in?
Absolutely. So I would say the vast majority of our caseload is going to be patients that are coming in for mobility issues. So this might be a person's pet that is aging and starting to show lameness, maybe not keeping up or being as playful with its housemates, having difficulty on longer walks, etc. But we certainly get involved with other cases too. So cases where young animals like a puppy might have something like underlying hip dysplasia, so some laxity in its hip joints and is having issues because of that. We get involved with post-surgical cases within the hospital. So if a patient had an orthopedic or a spinal surgery and needs some rehabilitation after that surgery, we can get involved. There is a whole other umbrella of patients in integrative oncology, so patients that maybe have been diagnosed with cancer and owners are interested in some integrative therapeutic options to optimize their health with that disease prognosis as well. So a lot of different patients, and every now and then we get involved with our ZooMed crew, which is always fun, which is often aiming at healing musculoskeletal type injuries, but certainly some other things as well.
Okay, I think a lot of this sounds very relatable. In particular, animals that have maybe had some kind of surgical procedure and might benefit from some therapy afterwards. This happens with humans all the time, right?
Absolutely. So a typical human, if they undergo some type of orthopedic procedure in the hospital, they'll usually have a human physical therapist in that hospital start working with them right away postoperatively. Then they might get moved over to a rehab facility for some care specifically just for rehab, but out of the primary hospital. And then they'll be seeing a physical therapist as an outpatient, even after they're discharged from that rehab facility. And we're kind of offering a very similar thing in veterinary medicine. We'll treat the patients even as soon as the first day postoperatively when we think it will be beneficial. We can have them stay on in the hospital through our rehabilitation service and continue that on an inpatient level with them still being in the hospital for as long as needed, and then move to seeing them, maybe once or twice a week for the first immediate, post-operative period.
The animals being treated, do they generally fall? I mean, you did mention young animals that are experiencing some, say, like you mentioned, a hip issue. Would you say most of them tend to be a little bit older animals?
Yeah, the vast majority of our caseload is going to be a little bit older. These are the guys that are tending to start just as in humans, starting to have some joint aches and pains, starting to have, tendons that maybe aren't working as well as they should. Maybe a little sprain or strain injury, overdoing it, playing with a housemate. I would say the bulk of our caseload falls under the older population, but there are certainly some younger guys that we work with as well.
Are efforts made to rule out other conditions prior to beginning a kind of therapy?
Of course. And this is where veterinary medicine is a little bit different from the human side in relation to the rehab that we do. So, we are certainly veterinarians first. So we're going to be evaluating our cases just like a human doctor or orthopedic, doctor would. So making sure that we're coming up with the reason for the lameness or the pain that we're seeing, running diagnostics like x-rays as needed, and then coming up with our therapy plan.
The plan might involve a number of visits, right, in order to treat this animal. Is it going to be an ongoing thing in many cases, or is it going to be maybe just a couple visits?
And it depends on the injury and what we're dealing with in the individual patient. So if we're dealing, for instance, with a tendon or ligament injury that maybe isn't as severe, we might be seeing them for more of a short-term type thing, 2 to 3 months, and then getting them back to their normal routine. Whereas with an older patient, if they are starting to have arthritis in a lot of different joints, or they're starting to have issues with, intervertebral discs in their back, we might be looking at a more longer-term maintenance-type therapy approach.
This, I imagine, comes with a cost associated with it. And given that it is a kind of novel therapy in some instances, are the cost, and we don't need to get into any exact specifics because, of course, that would vary case by case. But do you feel that clients find it to be a cost-effective alternative to more historically traditional therapies?
Yeah, and I think that it is very case by case, and there are ways that we can modify, our approach based on what's practical for the client as well. It has to be this relationship building between the veterinarian, the client, and the patient to make the most appropriate plan for that whole relationship. Sometimes we might be putting a lot on the owner at home, too, giving them some targeted things they can be doing through exercises, through heat and massage, et cetera, at home, offering other supplement options rather than having as many in-hospital type therapy appointments, and then rechecking with them a little bit further apart in some cases rather than seeing, for instance, the patient every week, every month, kind of routinely.
I think that this is relatable, too, to many people who will be listening to this program right now. The idea that you do go in you get some therapy, but you're also given some homework, which is to do these things so that you, it just, it helps you heal, it helps you get stronger or what have you, and that way you're doing it in between visits. Otherwise, you know, you might have to just visit every day, but that isn't always necessary. If you can help your dog to do some particular activity at home under the guidance of the veterinarian, then that might enable some healing in between visits. That sounds good. Do you find that people are able to keep up with that at home without a veterinarian on site to kind of instruct them? They must be involved in the appointments with the veterinarian to see what needs to be done so that they can do that at home.
Absolutely. And this became a really big challenge with the pandemic that we're going through, actually, because we like to, you know, go through all the exercises in person, have the owner or the client's hands on the patient to make sure that they're comfortable with everything we want them to be doing at home. So under the current restrictions, we've actually made videos for all of the common exercises we have our pet parents doing at home. So they can, you know, log on to our site, look at the videos that we recommended specifically for their patient, and go ahead and get a good look at how they should be doing that. And certainly we can still, in some instances, show them, you know, in person as well at this point.
You know, this is good news to hear because I am always concerned on this program with the kind of information that people find on the internet. And while I do remain ambivalent about the benefits of the internet overall, I have found that YouTube can be an amazing resource if you're trying to learn some tips for doing some project around your house or for, you know, how to make paper airplanes or you name it. But maybe it's not the best source for medical and veterinary information. To hear you say that the information is offered by professionals is good to know.
Absolutely. You definitely can't believe everything you find on YouTube.
Now, when folks are coming in and bringing their pets and are finding out, okay, my pet might benefit from some of these therapies, and you develop a plan and the folks kind of go through it, do they find that it often has noticeable benefits in fairly short order? Is it something they can expect to continue for a long time?
Yeah, I would say we often do see, you know, some response right away. So it's not uncommon that we're, even after the first appointment, second appointment, our pet parents are starting to say, hey, you know, he was just much more lively on his walk. You know, I definitely am noticing some benefit, or he wasn't as painful when I went to pet him in this spot, type of thing. So again, it depends a little bit case by case about what our goals are, whether we're trying to, you know, slow progression of a chronic disease like arthritis, whether we're trying to increase muscle mass along with that to get the patient stronger and more comfortable. So it's a little bit variable, but I'd say we're really going by both what the pet parent is seeing at home and with what we're seeing in the clinic, because certainly, you know, our clients know their pets the best, and we want these guys to have the best possible quality of life in their lifestyle and in their routine.
That is the name of the game. Okay, this is the place where we're going to take our second break of the program. I want to remind listeners that this is Animal Airwaves Live. I'm Dana Hill. My guest today from the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine is Dr. Aaron Mishosha. We're talking about the benefits of integrative veterinary medicine, and we'll be back with more right after this. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Animal Airwaves Live. I'm Dana Hill, and my guest today from the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine is Dr. Aaron Mishosha. We're talking about the benefits of integrative veterinary medicine. And when we left off, we'd been talking about some of the kinds of therapies that animals can receive that are beneficial, especially following things like, I don't know, injuries or sports injuries and so forth. And I wonder if we can, Dr. Mishra, just kind of explain a little bit more about the nature of sports injuries and our pets. What kind of injuries are these?
Yeah, so probably one of the most common injuries that we see is equivalent to a human ACL tear. So it's a ligament within your knee that dogs actually commonly injure as well. And so very commonly you'll see maybe a middle-aged to slightly older dog that's, you know, running around in the backyard, or maybe it's an actual athletic dog and doing something like running agility courses. Or out hunting, and they can have this issue where this ligament actually ruptures, just like a human that might be playing a sport. Commonly in humans, this is happening around the age brackets of maybe 20 to 40, but certainly can be older or younger as well.
If this happens, the animal will probably, like we would, stop doing this activity right away. And that would alarm the animal's owner, who would presumably take this animal to a veterinarian. The veterinarian is going to do an exam, probably some diagnostic imaging, I would imagine, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then,
exactly.
Yeah, and then is going to suggest some possible treatments. Now, would some of the integrative medicine therapies be in addition to a possible surgery, or could it even be in lieu of surgery?
It can be both. So a lot of times for larger dogs especially, we will often try to get surgery involved if possible, because it has been shown that they tend to do a little bit better when they have surgical stabilization of the knee as well. For smaller dogs, so like our little terrier breeds, a lot of them can actually do pretty okay with just kind of conservative rehabilitation, integrative therapeutic type options. Certainly, we can treat any size dog either way, and a lot of times, even when dogs are undergoing surgery, we'll still work with them following surgery to optimize their degree of comfort and mobility.
I imagine that they will be experiencing some discomfort, especially early on when they're attempting some of these therapeutic procedures. How do you encourage them when it might make them feel pain?
Absolutely, and that's something that we have to really try to take care of as well. So we don't want to make them more painful with what they're doing, but we do need to kind of maintain their muscle in their hind limb to make sure that they're able to put less forces on the joint itself. So using medications and or supplements, as well as some other options that we have, such as laser therapy maybe, or ice compressive therapy. Sometimes for these guys, we might even use an injection into the joint, such as a platelet-rich plasma type injection, to help really calm down the pain and inflammation in the area so we can maximize the exercises that we're doing as well.
Okay, now, you just mentioned three things, two of which sounded pretty high tech, the plasma and the lasers. The one was just icing it. That seems fairly straightforward and kind of old-fashioned. Now, of course, whatever works is kind of going to be the best therapy. But some of these are sound pretty high tech. I mean, tell me more about this plasma therapy.
Yeah, so this is actually taking a little bit of a blood sample from the patient into a special syringe, spinning it down, and making a plasma sample from that patient that is high in platelet numbers and low in white blood cell and red blood cell numbers. So these platelets contain growth factors as well as anti-inflammatory factors. So when we take this platelet-rich plasma and we can inject it into a joint, or say if there's a minor injury to a tendon or ligament, we could also potentially inject it there to promote healing of that region and reduction of inflammation in the region.
You mentioned some laser therapy. How does that work exactly?
Yeah, so laser therapy is basically using light to change things at a cellular level. So we might apply laser to, say, a joint or tendon or ligament that is injured as well. And what we're looking for is for that light to be absorbed within the cells in the joint or the tendon or ligament, which gives the cell more energy to do processes that it's already doing to promote healing. So again, kind of stimulating production of these growth factors, which stimulate healing, increasing blood flow to the region, increasing antioxidants in the area. So the cell's already trying to do this, but we can really improve the degree which is able to do that with laser therapy.
Animals will often experience some geriatric diseases. It would maybe seem a little bit obvious to assume that these will be degenerative, that is to say that they will become worse as the animal gets older once they've begun. Can some of these therapies help slow the effects of aging? I don't mean in terms of like the way that the animal looks or anything, but just some of the, you know, pain, discomfort associated with these geriatric diseases.
Absolutely. And probably the most common of these type of degenerative conditions that we're dealing with are osteoarthritis, which is present in the vast majority of older dogs, just as in people, as well as intervertebral disc degeneration. So those, you know, discs between the vertebrae and your back, just as in humans, you can have those become harder over time and not as good as at withstanding normal forces. That can happen in dogs and cause back pain as well. So these different options we have can help to slow the progression of both of these different conditions and improve the animal's comfort and mobility as well.
Tell me about some of the things that you might do to treat arthritis in a pet that has come in. It is going to be something that is affecting, it sounds like, a lot of pets, and it's probably something that makes it to where walking is uncomfortable, jumping is uncomfortable, maybe just living in general is uncomfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. So our first time seeing a pet, we really try to get a good idea of what's going on at home. So what's expected of this dog, cat, et cetera, in their everyday life? What is their normal routine? And how can we modify that or use their routine to make them a little bit more comfortable, work the exercises we might have the owner in into their normal routine? We also like to get a really good history as to what they're currently eating. So as you might have noticed, a lot of animals in the United States and across the world are overweight. And this is really detrimental to these type of degenerative conditions that we're talking about, such as arthritis. So making sure that we're getting any extra weight off of these guys is probably the most crucial thing in improving their comfort and maximizing their mobility in the long term. And then we can get into these other fancier options too. So whether we're using something like water therapy, swimming, or walking in our underwater treadmill, and to help build up muscle strength without putting a lot of force on the joint. We might start doing things like joint injections to slow the progression of that condition, whether it's platelet-rich plasma like we talked about. Sometimes we're even using stem cells at this point. And using these different modalities we have available to us as well. So just like I said, with the knee injury that younger dogs or middle-aged dogs can have, laser therapy can be helpful from slowing progression of arthritis within joints too.
Okay, we've all seen that dogs often love the water. How well do dogs take to walking on a treadmill that is submerged?
Yeah, it's really funny. So I have a lot of pet parents that say to me, you know, this dog hates water, like, good luck. and it's very unique. So we have them walk into the underwater treadmill. You know, one of us is in there with them, so they don't feel nervous about it. And when they're walking in, the water is only maybe, you know, half an inch or an inch high. And then when they're already in there, we start raising the water level. So it's not as nerve-wracking as them, you know, going into a pool of water. So I think a lot of them tolerate it much better than, say, jumping into a pool or a lake, where some dogs might be a little hesitant to do that.
Okay, but it sounds like that a veterinarian or a tech has to be in the water, and that means that you've got to be prepared to have a kind of a pool day, so to speak, if you're on duty doing that. But the animals, as you say, might need a little bit of guidance, because it does probably seem unnatural to them to be, one, walking on a treadmill, and two, be doing so in the water.
Yeah, I have to say they actually take to it really quickly. So most dogs, after, you know, one session, and sometimes not even a session, you know, they'll walk in there for a couple minutes, and they're like, oh, I got this done. I can just walk normally in this water. I get this. And we use toys. Sometimes we'll use some treat bribery to make it a positive experience as well.
Now, something like underwater treadmills, something like lasers, these all seem to be fairly cutting-edge therapies. But I want to ask about something that, while it is definitely involves a lot of knowledge and understanding, and it is something that is relatively new to veterinary medicine, probably in the United States, it is something that is old as can be, and that is acupuncture.
Mm-hmm.
How can acupuncture be employed to help pets, and what different conditions can it benefit?
Many different conditions. We're probably most commonly using it for adjunctive pain relief. So with an animal that maybe doesn't quite have the maintained comfort that we would hope for on standard medications and exercise regimes, or maybe can't have those other therapies because of other underlying conditions, acupuncture is very benign. There really aren't negative side effects to speak of associated with other organ systems. And we're really using it to improve the comfort of that animal in multiple ways. So by stimulating the skin, the muscles in certain areas, we can really reduce the pain signal that's going to the brain, and have a pretty prolonged duration of pain relief for the pet.
I think that some people listening who have not experienced acupuncture, and I will include myself, I've never had acupuncture, but I have spoken to people whose opinions I respect who have sworn by it and said that it is remarkably effective. And I would only say that maybe if, you know, you just hear about it, you feel like, oh, there is a contradiction between pain relief and getting small needles kind of poking you. But it seems to be something that genuinely does help people and animals.
Yeah, and there are multiple mechanisms of action of how acupuncture is creating pain relief. And it's a little bit hard to explain without having a science background, but for kind of most people, if you have, you know, joint pain, bone pain, or even if you have a kind of a cut in an area and you kind of put some pressure, you know, just to the side of that area, it can relieve that underlying throbbing pain that you're having by maybe digging your nail into your skin. It's very similar to that. But we're yielding a more prolonged effect by using specific points that really have more effects than other areas of on the body.
Now, we know that animals can be very excitable. I imagine that something like acupuncture does require precision. How does one go about giving an animal an acupuncture treatment while not having an animal kind of wildly flail about? Is some sedation required?
No, actually. And I was pretty surprised about this when I started doing this, you know, this training and practice myself. They actually tolerate it really well. So they usually become very relaxed. About half of our patients fall asleep while we're performing acupuncture. And it's part of the mechanism of action. You know, there is some sedative effect along with the pain relief effect. So we are stimulating, you know, release of opioids within the body. So, you know, certainly we're commonly using oral opioid medications on the human side and on the veterinary side for pain relief. But these are things that are already present in the body, and we can kind of maximize the use of that using acupuncture.
That's fascinating. Is it understood, the mechanism by which that happens?
Yeah, it is. So it's partially how you're applying the acupuncture. And so, for instance, you can choose to use acupuncture with just what you would normally think of putting a needle in the skin. You can also choose to stimulate specific needles with an electrode, and you can change the frequency that you're stimulating it with as well. And depending on the frequency you choose, it actually can change, you know, which pain relief mechanism that you're using. So we can kind of even fine-tune it in that way to choose maybe an opioid-specific pain relief for a specific patient.
Okay, so acupuncture is an option for some conditions, and it sounds to me like the other different procedures that can be employed in integrative medicine have been successful in many animals. You've been talking largely about dogs. What kind of services can cats benefit from? Because cats are not the same as dogs. Everybody who's listened to this program will understand that not every medication, not every procedure that a cat will tolerate or a dog will tolerate will a cat.
For sure. So we certainly treat less cats than we do dogs, and kind of by nature of what they tolerate as well. But we have had cats that have walked in the underwater treadmill. We certainly have cats that tolerate acupuncture. I think they actually tolerate acupuncture better than, you know, the more active exercises a lot of the time. But we can train cats, you know, using their normal activities and what they like to do exercises that can benefit them as well. So the physical therapy aspect is actually pretty easy. And then depending on the cat, we might be able to use these other types of modalities too. And it sounds kind of crazy, but I mean, we're even treating some exotic and zoo animals using these different things. I have a bat from Luby Bat Conservatory that I treat weekly with laser and acupuncture. And she does really well. She eats some peach baby food or drinks juicy juice while I treat her, and she's happy as can be.
Yes, that sounds outstanding. Laser bats. Well, the whole idea here that we're talking about today with integrative medicine, it is something that we, as we said at the top of the program, that is, it is growing in the field of veterinary medicine, right? That is to say, it formerly was not probably a big component of veterinary medicine. Now it is a larger part of veterinary medicine. Do you say it will probably continue to grow in its adoption?
Absolutely. I think just like on, you know, the human medicine side, we're looking for, you know, treatment options that are easy to implement, that maybe have less side effects, that can complement traditional medications and therapies. And it's being sought after by clients. It's being sought after by veterinary students as well. You know, we have more and more students that are looking at universities that offer this as part of the curriculum because they want to be more knowledgeable in it and able to practice some of it when they graduate.
If a lot of these therapies have come from the realm of human medicine, can you think of additional therapies that in the future might make their way from human medicine to veterinary medicine and could potentially successfully treat animals, which today might only be treated with more invasive methods?
Sure. I mean, so some of the newer areas that we're looking into, hyperbaric oxygen is even pretty new on the human side, and we're really just just starting to try to use hyperbaric oxygen for treatment in veterinary patients. And I'm very fortunate to be kind of part of that process. But we're kind of actively working on, you know, where this is used in human medicine and where it might be beneficial in our veterinary patients as well. Chiropractics is probably another area, so fairly common on the human side in certain types of cases, and is starting to be looked at on the veterinary side as well.
Well, this is a fascinating topic, and it's one that we really haven't discussed on this program in some years, though, as I hinted earlier. We did talk about acupuncture, but I swear it was probably 8 years ago on this show. So it's good to hear more about some of these alternative therapies and the benefits of integrative veterinary medicine. And Dr. Erin Rashosha, I'm grateful for your time today. Thank you for talking to me.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
I want to say thank you to everybody for listening today, and thank you to Sarah Carey over at the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine for her help with the program. I'm Dana Hill. I hope you can join me again next time for another episode of Animal Airwaves Live.